Chapter 3. It was all but dark when they rode past the main house and along the drive, past the porticos with their slender carved iron posts, past the white plaster walls coined with red sandstone blocks, and the terracotta filigree along the upper parapets. The front of the house was faced with three stone arches, and above them were carved the words, Hacienda de San Diego, in letters arched over the initials LT. The tall Palladian windows were shuttered, and the shutters were weathered and broken, and paint and plaster were flaking from the walls, and the portico ceiling was no more than bare wood lath, all water-stained and buckled. They went on across the yard toward what looked to be the domicilios, where smoke was rising against the evening sky, and rode through the standing wooden gates into the courtyard and sat the horses side by side. In one corner of the enclosure stood the carcass of an antique Dodge touring car, long stripped of wheels and axles, of glass and seats. At the far end of the compound, a cook fire burned on the ground, and by its light they could see two gaudy caravan wagons, with wash hung between them, and passing back and forth before the fire both men and women in robes and kimonos who appeared to belong to a circus. "¿Qué clase de lugar es este?" Billy said. "Es ejido," said the girl. "¿Qué clase de gente?" "No lo sé." He swung down, and the girl slid from the back of Boyd's horse and came and took the reins. "What are them?" said Boyd. "I don't know." They entered the compound, Billy and the girl afoot, the girl leading the horse. Boyd rode behind them. The figures at the far end paid them no mind at all. Two boys were lighting lamps from a burning split of wood at the fire and passing the lit lamps by their bales on a forked pole to a boy on the azotea who moved against the deepening sky, hanging the lamps from the parapet. The ground in the compound became more illuminated as he went, and soon a rooster began to call. Other boys were stacking hay bales against a wall, and under the farther portal men were unrolling a painted canvas drop much cracked and weathered from its travels. Two of the costumed figures seemed engaged in a controversy, and one of them stepped back and flung his arms wide, as if to demonstrate the measure of something outsized. Then he burst into song in some alien tongue. All movement ceased until he had done. Then all began again. "¿Dónde están los domicilios?" said Billy. The girl nodded toward the dark beyond the walls. "Afuera," she said. "Let's go." "I'd like to see it," Boyd said. "You don't even know what it is." "It's something." Billy took the bridle reins from the girl. He looked back at the fire, at the figures there. "We can come back," he said. "They're just getting set up." They rode out to where the three long adobe buildings stood that housed the workers, and they rode up the passageway between the first two, paced the way by a gauntlet of bristling and snarling cur dogs. The evening was warm, and there were cook fires burning out of doors, and in the soft light a muted clink of utensils and the delicate slapping of hands shaping out tortillas. People drifted from fire to fire, and their voices carried on the darkness, and more distantly yet the sound of a guitar on the sweetness of the summer night. They were given rooms at the far end of the row, and the girl unsaddled Billy's horse and led both animals off to water them. Billy fished a wooden match from his shirt pocket and struck it alight with his thumbnail. The two rooms had a single door and a single window, and high ceilings of vigas with latillas of sticks. A low door connected them, and in the corner of the second room was a fireplace and a small altar with a virgin of painted wood. A jar that held dead weeds, a drinking glass in the bottom of which lay a medallion of blackened wax. Against the wall stood a contrivance of poles lashed together into a frame and webbed with strips of rawhide with the hair on. It had the look of some rude agrarian implement, but was in fact a bed. He blew out the match and walked out and stood in the door. Boyd was sitting on the stoop watching the girl. She was at the watering trough at the far end of the compound, holding the horses while they drank. She and the two horses and the dog were surrounded by a semicircle of sitting dogs of every stripe and color, but she paid them no mind. She stood very patiently with the horses while they drank, while they raised their dripping mouths and looked about, and while they drank again. She did not touch the horses nor talk to them. She just waited while they drank, and they drank for a long time. They ate with a family named Munoz. They must have looked hard used by the road, for the woman kept urging food upon them, and the man made little lifting motions with his outheld hands that they take more. He asked Billy where it was that they had come from, and received the news with a certain sadness or resignation, as of things that could not be helped. They ate squatting on the ground with spoons and clay plates. The girl offered nothing in the way of her own origins, and no one asked. While they were eating, a strong tenor voice came floating on the night over the roofs of the domicilios. It ran up the scales and down twice in succession. Silence fell over the camp. A dog began to howl. Only after it seemed there would be nothing more forthcoming did the ejiditarios commence to talk again. A little later a bell tolled from somewhere off in the compound, and in the long after-clang they began to rise and call out to one another. The woman had carried her comal and her pots to the house, and she now stood in the lamp-lit doorway with a small child on one arm. She saw Billy still sitting on the ground, and she motioned him up. "Vamanos," she called. He looked up at her. He said that he had no money, but she only stared at him as if she did not understand. Then she said that everyone was going, and that those who had money would pay for those who did not. She said that everyone must go. There could be no thought of people being left behind. Who would permit such a thing? He rose and stood. He looked for Boyd, but he could not see him or the girl. Stragglers were hurrying through the smoke of the dying cook fires. The woman had shifted the child to her other hip and come forward and took him by the hand as if he were himself a child. "Vamanos," she said. "Está bien." They followed the others up the hill, the crowd moving slowly for the old people and the old people urging them to pass and go on. None would. The empty house on the crest of the rise above them stood bleak and lightless, but music was coming from the long-walled compound where the shops and establos were once sighted, the domiciles of the overseers. Light fell out through the tall bay doors, and cressets of oil or pitch fashioned out of buckets burned at either side of the stone archway at the entrance, and here the ejiditarios were queued, and they shuffled forward with their centavos and their pesos clutched in their hands to offer them up to the doorman where he stood in his polished black suit. Two young men carrying a litter passed through the crowd. The litter was made from poles and sheeting, and the old man lying on it was dressed in coat and tie, and he clutched a wooden rosary and stared grimly at the arch of sky above him. Billy looked at the child the woman was carrying, but the child was asleep. When they reached the gates, the woman paid, and the gatekeeper thanked her and rattled the coppers into a bucket on the ground beside him, and they passed through into the courtyard. The gaudy little wagons had been drawn up at the farther end of the enclosure. Lamps stood in a semicircle on the packed clay ground before them, and lamps had been hung from a rope stretched overhead. And in the uplight overhead, the faces of young boys watched along the parapet like rows of theatrical masks displayed there. The mules that stood between the wagon shafts were fitted out in braid and tinsel and velvet trappings, and the mules and caravans alike were the same that conveyed the little company over the back roads of the Republic to stand at night in just these costumes while the lamps were lit and the crowds pushed forward in some backland plaza or alameda, where a man passed up and back and swung before him like a censer a water pail pierced with nail holes by which to lay the dust, and the prima donna moved in lascivious silhouette behind a wagon sheet, donning her costume or turning to regard herself in a mirror which none could see but all could imagine to be present. He watched the play with interest but could make little of it. The company was perhaps describing some adventure of their own in their travels, and they sang into each other's faces and wept, and in the end the man in buffoon's motley slew the woman and slew another man, perhaps his rival, with a dagger, and young boys ran forward with the curtain hems to draw them shut, and the mules, standing in their traces, raised their heads up out of their sleep and began to shift and step. There was no applause. The crowd sat quietly on the ground. Some of the women were crying. After a while, the majordomo who had spoken to them prior to the performance stepped out through the curtain and thanked them for their attendance and stepped to one side and bowed as the boys carried the curtains open again. The actors stood before them hand in hand and bowed and curtsied, and there was a smattering of applause, and then the curtain closed for good. In the morning, before it was quite light, he walked out of the compound and down to the river. He walked out over the plank bridge on its stone piers and stood looking down at the clear cold waters of the Casas Grandes running out of the mountains to the south. He turned and looked downstream. 100 feet away in water to her thighs stood the prima donna naked. Her hair was down, and it was wet and clinging to her back, and it reached to the water. He stood frozen. She turned and swung her hair before her and bent and lowered it into the river. Her breasts swung above the water. He took off his hat and stood with his heart laboring under his shirt. She raised up and gathered her hair and twisted out the water, her skin so white, the dark hair under her belly almost an indelicacy. She bent once more and trailed her hair in the water with a swaying motion sideways, and then stood and swung it about her in a great hoop of spray, and stood with her head back and her eyes closed. The sun rising over the gray ranges to the east lit the upper air. She held one hand up. She moved her body. She swept both hands before her. She bent and caught her falling hair in her arms and held it, and she passed one hand over the surface of the water as if to bless it. And he watched, and as he watched, he saw that the world which had always been before him everywhere had been veiled from his sight. She turned, and he thought she might sing to the sun. She opened her eyes and saw him there on the bridge, and she turned her back and walked slowly up out of the river and was lost to his view among the pale standing trunks of the cottonwoods. And the sun rose, and the river ran as before, but nothing was the same, nor did he think it ever would be. He walked slowly back up to the compound. In the new sunrise, the shadows of workers setting out for the fields with their shouldered hoes passed one by one along the eastern-facing wall of the granary, like figures in some agrarian drama. He got his breakfast from the Munoz woman, and walked out with his saddle over his shoulder, and caught his horse, and saddled him, and mounted up, and rode out to see the country. It was midday before the caravans bearing the opera company sallied forth out through the gates and down the hill and across the bridge to set out south along the road to Mata Ortiz, to Las Varas and Pabícora. In the hard noon light, the faded gilt of the lettering and the weathered red paint and sun-bleached tapestries seemed fallen grace from the pageantry of the prior night, and the caravans in their trundling and swaying slowly south and in their diminishing in the heat and desolation seemed charged with some new and more austere enterprise, as if the light of God's day had sobered their hopes, as if the light and the country thereby made visible were alien to their true purpose. He watched from a rise in the rolling lands south of the hacienda, where the grass seethed in the wind underfoot. The caravans moved slowly through the cottonwoods on the far side of the river. The little mules plodded. He leaned and spat and put the horse forward with his heels. In the afternoon, he walked through the empty rooms of the old residencia. The rooms were stripped of their fixtures and chandeliers, and the parquet flooring was mostly gone. Turkeys stepped and moved away through the rooms before him. The house smelled of damp and old straw, and water stains had wrought upon the swagged and crumbling plasterwork great free-form sepia maps as of old antique kingdoms, ancient worlds. In the corner of the parlor, a dead animal, dry hide and bones. A dog, perhaps. He walked out into the courtyard, the raw mud brickwork showing through the plaster of the enclosing walls. In the center of the open space, a stonework well. A bell rang in the distance. In the evening, the men smoked and talked and drifted in small groups from fire to fire. The Munoz woman brought his boot to him, and he examined it in the firelight. The long slice in the leather had been mended back with awl and cord. He thanked her and pulled it on. The women knelt on the packed dirt and leaned over the coals and turned with their bare hands the tortillas off the hot sheet-iron comals, leaving along the unleavened edges like tally marks, fingerprints of black, from where they'd fed the charcoal fire. An endless ritual, endlessly repeated, the propagation of the great secular host of the Mexicans. The girl helped the woman prepare the meal, and after the men had been fed, she came and sat beside Boyd and ate in silence. Boyd seemed to pay her little mind. He'd told Boyd that they'd be leaving in 2 days' time, and in the way she raised her eyes to look at him across the fire, he knew that Boyd had told her. She worked all the day following in the fields, and in the evening she came in and went to wash herself with bowl and rag behind the curtain, and then went out to sit and watch small boys playing ball in the clay court between the buildings. When he rode in, she stood and came over and took the bridle reins, and she asked him if she could go with them. He stepped down and took off his hat and clawed his fingers through his sweaty hair and put his hat back on again and looked at her. "No," he said. She stood holding the horse. She looked away. her dark eyes swimming. He asked her why she wanted to go with them, but she only shook her head. He asked her if she was afraid, if there was something here of which she was afraid. She didn't answer. He asked how old she was, and she said 14. He nodded. He punched a crescent in the dirt underfoot with the heel of his boot. He looked at her. "A quien le busca?" he said. She didn't answer. "No se puede quedar aquí?" She shook her head. She said she could not stay. She said she had no place to go. He looked out across the compound in the tranquil evening light. He said that he had no place to go either, so what help could he be to her? But she only shook her head and said that she would go wherever they went. She didn't care. At dawn the day following, while he saddled his horse, the workers came out bringing gifts of food. They brought tortillas and chiles and carne seca and live chickens and whole hoops of cheese until they were burdened with provisions beyond their means to carry them. The Munoz woman gave Billy something which, when she stepped back, he saw was a clutch of coins knotted into a rag. He tried to give it back, but she turned away and walked back to her house without speaking. When they rode out of the compound, the girl was riding behind Boyd on the bareback horse with her arms around his waist. They rode all day south and nooned by the river and ate an enormous lunch out of the provisions they carried and slept under the trees. Late in the day, a few miles south of Las Varas, on the Madera Road, they came to a place where the horses balked and stood blowing in the road. "Look yonder," said Boyd. The opera company was camped beyond the road in a field of wildflowers. The caravans were parked side by side, and a canvas awning had been hung between them for a ramada, and in the afforded shade the prima donna was taking her ease in a great canvas hammock with a pot of tea on the table at her side and a Japanese fan. A victrola was playing from the open door of the caravan, and in the field beyond their encampment a number of workers leaned on their implements with their hats in their hands and listened to the music. She'd heard the horses on the road, and she sat in her hammock and raised one hand to shade her eyes and looked out, although the sun was behind her and the awning shaded her anyway. "I guess they just camp out like gypsies," Billy said. "They are gypsies." "Who says?" "Everybody." The horse's ears courted the compass for the source of the music. "They're broke down." "What makes you say that?" "They'd have got farther than this." "Maybe they just decided to stop here." "What for? There ain't nothing here." Billy leaned and spat. "You reckon she's here just by herself?" "I don't know." "What do you reckon's got into the horses?" "I don't know. She's done went and put the spy glasses to us now." The prima donna had fetched up from the table a small pair of lorgnette opera glasses and was peering toward the road with them. "Let's get down." "All right." They walked the horses along the road, and he sent the girl over to see if the woman needed anything. The music stopped. The woman called into the caravan, and after a while the music began again. "There's a mule's died," Boyd said. "How do you know?" "There just has." Billy looked over the camp. There were no animals of any description about. "Likely the mules is hobbled up in them oaks yonder," he said. "No, they ain't." When the girl came back, she said that one of the mules had died. "Shit," said Billy. "What?" said Boyd. "You all set that up."
"Set what up?"
"About the mule. She's made a signal or something."
"A dead mule signal."
"Yeah." Billy leaned and spat and shook his head. The girl stood with one hand shading her eyes, waiting. Billy looked at her, her thin clothes, her dusty legs, her feet in huaraches made from strap leather and rawhide. He asked her how long the men had been gone, and she said 2 days.
"We better go over and see if she's all right."
"What do you aim to do if she ain't?" Boyd said.
"Hell if I know."
"Well, why don't we just keep riding?" "I thought you was the one like to go around rescuing people." Boyd didn't answer. He mounted up, and Billy turned and looked up at him. He shucked one boot out of the stirrup and leaned down and gave the girl his hand, and she put her foot in the stirrup, and he swung her up and then put the horse forward.
"Well, let's go," he said. "If there ain't nothing else will satisfy you."
He followed them out across the field. When the workers saw them coming, they began once again to grub in the ground with their short hoes.
He rode up alongside Boyd, and they sat their horses side by side before the reclining prima donna and wished her a good afternoon. She nodded. She studied them across the top of the splayed fan. It was painted with some oriental scene, and the bolsters were of ivory inlaid with silver wire. "Los hombres han salido por Madero," said Billy. She nodded. She said that they would be returning at any moment. She lowered the fan slightly and looked out down the road south, as if they might be appearing even now. Billy sat his horse. He didn't seem to be able to think what else to say. After a while, he took his hat off.
"You are Americans," the woman said.
"Yes, ma'am, I reckon the girl told you."
"There is nothing to hide."
"We don't have nothing to hide. I just come over to see if there was anything we could do for you." She arched her painted brows in surprise. "I thought maybe you all was broke down out here." She looked at Boyd. Boyd looked off toward the mountains to the south. "We're headed yon way," Billy said, "if you wanted us to carry a message or anything." She sat up slightly in the hammock and called out into the caravan. "Basta," she called. "Basta la musica." She sat listening, one hand balanced on the table. In a moment the music ceased, and she subsided again into the hammock and spread the fan and looked across the top of it at the young jinete who sat his horse before her. Billy looked toward the caravan, thinking someone might appear in the doorway, but no one did. "What all did the mule die of?" he said.
"That mule," she said. "That mule died because its blood all fell out in the road."
"Ma'am?" She raised a hand languidly before her, her ringed and tapered fingers weaving, as if she described the ascending of the animal's soul.
"That mule was having his troubles, but no one could reason with that mule. Gasparito should not have been put to attend to the wants of that mule. He had no temperament for such a mule. Now you see what has come to pass."
"No, ma'am."
"Drinking, too. In these matters, drinking is always present. And then the fear. The other mules are screaming. Tienen mucho miedo, screaming. Sliding and falling in the blood and screaming. What does one say to these animals? How does one put their minds at rest?"
She made a peremptory gesture to one side, as of some casting to the winds in the dry hot solitude, the bird calls in the little glade, the evening's onset.
"Can such animals ever be restored to their former state? There can be no question. Especially in the case of dramatic mules, such as these mules. These mules can have no peace now. No peace, you see."
"What was it he done to the mule?"
"He tried to cut off the head with a machete."
"Of course."
"What did the girl say to you? She speaks no English?"
"No, ma'am. She just said it died, was all." The prima donna looked at the girl suspiciously.
"Where did you find this girl?"
"She was just walking along the road. I wouldn't have thought you could cut off a mule's head with a machete."
"Of course not. Only a drunken fool would attempt such a feat. When the hacking availed not, he began to saw. When Rogelio seized him, he would have hacked at Rogelio. Rogelio was disgusted, disgusted. They fell in the road, in the blood and the dust, rolling about under the feet of the animals. The carriage threatening to overturn and all in it. Disgusting. What if someone should come along on this road? What if people appeared on this road at such a time to see this spectacle?"
"What happened to the mule?"
"The mule? The mule died, of course."
"They wouldn't nobody shoot it or nothing?"
"Yes, there is a story. I myself was the one. I came forward to shoot this mule. What do you think? Rogelio prohibited this act. Because it will frighten the other mules, he says to me. Can you imagine this? At this point in history. Then he wishes to dismiss Gasparito. He says that Gasparito is a lunatic, but Gasparito is only a borrachon. From Veracruz, of course. And a gypsy. Can you imagine this?"
"I thought you was all gypsies." She sat up in the hammock.
"Como?" she said. "Como? ¿Quién lo dice?"
"Todo el mundo."
"Es mentira, mentira. ¿Me entiendes?"
She leaned over and spat twice into the dirt. At this moment the door did darken, and a small dark man in shirt sleeves stood glaring out. The prima donna turned in her hammock and looked up at him, as if his appearance in the doorway had cast a shadow visible to see. He looked over the visitors and their mounts and took from his shirt pocket a package of El Toro cigarettes, and put one in his mouth and fished about in his pocket for a match. "Buenas tardes," Billy said. The man nodded.
"You think a gypsy can sing an opera?" the woman said. "A gypsy? All gypsies can do is play the guitar and paint horses and dance their primitive dances."
She sat upright in the hammock and hiked her shoulders and spread her hands before her. Then she uttered a long, piercing note that was not quite a cry of pain and not quite anything else. The horses shied and arched their necks, and the riders had to haul them around, and still they twisted and stepped and rolled their eyes. Out in the fields, the workers stood stock still in their furrows.
"Do you know what that was?" she said.
"No, ma'am, it sure was loud."
"That was the do agudo. You think some gypsy can sing that note? Some croaking gypsy?"
"I guess I never give it a lot of thought."
"Show me this gypsy," said the prima donna. "This gypsy I wish to see."
"Who would paint a horse?"
"Gypsies, of course. Who else? Horse painters, dentists of horses."
Billy took off his hat and wiped his forehead with the back of his shirt sleeve and put the hat back on. The man in the door had come partway down the painted wooden steps and sat smoking. He leaned and snapped his fingers at the dog. The dog backed away.
"Whereabouts did this happen about the mule?" Billy said.
She raised up and pointed with the folded fan.
"On the road," she said. "Not 100 meters. We could go no farther. A trained mule, a mule with theatrical experience, slaughtered in its traces by a drunken fool."
The man on the steps took a last deep draw on his cigarette and flipped the stub at the dog.
"You got any message for your party if we see him?" said Billy.
"Tell Jaime that we are well and that he is to come at his own pace."
"Who is Jaime?"
"Punchineo. He is Punchineo."
"Ma'am?"
"The payaso. The clown."
"The clown?"
"Yes, the clown."
"In the show?"
"Yes."
"I won't know him without his war paint."
"Monday?"
"How will I know him?"
"You will know him."
"Does he make people laugh?"
"He makes people do what he wishes them to do. Sometimes he makes the young girls cry, but that is another history."
"Why does he kill you?" The prima donna leaned back in her hammock. She studied him. She looked out at the workers in the field. After a while, she turned to the man on the steps.
"Díganos, Gaspar, ¿por qué me mata el punchineo?"
He looked up at her. He looked at the riders.
"Te mata," he said, "porque él sabe tu secreto."
"Paf," said the prima donna.
"No es porque yo sé el de él?"
"No."
"A pesar de lo que piensa la gente?"
"A pesar de cualquier."
"¿Y qué es este secreto?"
The man raised one foot before him and turned his boot to examine it. It was a boot of black leather with lacing up the side, a kind seldom seen in that country.
"El secreto," he said, "es que en este mundo la máscara es la que es verdadera."
"Le entendió?" said the prima donna. He said that he understood. He asked her if that was her opinion also, but she only waved one hand languidly.
"So says the arriero," she said. "Quién sabe?"
"He said it was your secret."
"Paf, I have no secret. Anyway, it no longer interests me. To be killed night after night, it drains one's strength, one's powers of speculation. It is better to concentrate on small things."
"I reckon I would have thought he was just jealous."
"Yes, of course. But even to be jealous is a test of one's strength. Jealous in Durango and again in Monclova and in Monterrey. Jealous in heat and in rain and in cold. Such a jealousy must empty out the malice of 1,000 hearts, no? How is one to do this? I think it is better to make a study of smaller things. Then the larger will follow. In smaller things one can progress. There one's efforts are repaid. Perhaps just the attitude of the head, the movement of a hand. The arriero is only a spectator in these matters. He cannot see that for the wearer of the mask, nothing is changed. The actor has no power to act, but only as the world tells him. Mask or no mask is all one to him.
She picked up the opera glasses by their stem and scanned the countryside, the road, the long shadows upon the road.
"And where do you go, you three?" she said.
"We're down here hunting some horses that were stole."
"In whose charge were these horses?"
No one answered. She looked at Boyd. She spread the fan. Painted across the folded bellows of the rice paper was a dragon with great round eyes. She folded it shut.
"For how long will you seek these horses?" she said.
"Ever how long it takes."
"Podría ser un viaje largo."
"Quizás."
"Long voyages often lose themselves."
"Ma'am?"
"You will see. It is difficult even for brothers to travel together on such a voyage. The road has its own reasons, and no two travelers will have the same understanding of those reasons. If indeed they come to an understanding of them at all. Listen to the corridos of the country. They will tell you. Then you will see in your own life what is the cost of things. Perhaps it is true that nothing is hidden. Yet many do not wish to see what lies before them in plain sight. You will see. The shape of the road is the road. There is not some other road that wears that shape, but only the one. And every voyage begun upon it will be completed, whether horses are found or not."
"I reckon we better get on," Billy said.
"Andale, pues," said the prima donna. "May God go with you."
"I see this Punchneo on the road. I'll tell him you're waiting on him."
"Paf," said the prima donna. "Do not waste your breath."
"Adios."
"Adios."
He looked at the man on the steps. "Hasta luego," he said. The man nodded. "Adios," he said. Billy reined the horse around. He looked back and touched the brim of his hat. The prima donna opened the fan in a graceful falling gesture. The arriero leaned forward with his hands on his kneecaps and tried a last time to spit upon the dog, and then they all rode out across the field to the road. When he looked back at the prima donna, she was watching them through the spyglasses, as if she might better assess them in that way where they set forth upon the shadow-banded road, the coming twilight. Inhabiting only that ocular ground in which the country appeared out of nothing and vanished again into nothing, tree and rock and the darkening mountains beyond, all of it contained and itself containing only what was needed and nothing more. They made camp in an oak grove beside the river and built a fire and sat while the girl prepared their dinner out of the bounty they'd carried off from the ejido. When they'd eaten, she fed the dog the scraps and washed the plates and the pot and went to see about the horses. They rode out again late the next morning, and at noon they turned the horses out of the dirt roadway and took a path along the lower edge of a field of peppers and onto the trees and to the river where it shimmered quietly in the heat. The horses quickened their pace. The path turned and ran along an irrigation ditch and then descended into the trees and out again, and along a growth of river willows and through a stand of cane. A cool wind was coming off the water, the white tassels of the cane bending and hissing gently in the wind. Beyond the bracken, the sound of water falling. They came out of the canebrake at a trodden ford in the runoff from the irrigation channel. Above them was a pool where water ran from an old corrugated culvert pipe. The water spilled heavily into the pool, and splashing there in the water were half a dozen boys, stark naked. They saw the riders at the ford, and they saw the girl, but they paid them no mind.
"Damn," said Boyd.
He clapped his heels into the horse's ribs and put it forward through the sandy shallows. He didn't look back at the girl. She was watching the boys with good-natured interest. She looked behind at Billy and put her other arm around Boyd's waist, and they rode on. When they reached the river, she slid from the horse and took the reins and led both animals out into the water and loosed the latigo on Bird and stood with the horses while they drank. Boyd sat on the bank of the river with one of his boots in his hand.
"What's the matter?" said Billy.
"Nothing."
He limped down along the gravel bar, carrying his boot, and got a round rock and sat and ran his arm down into the boot and began to pound with the rock.
"You got a nail?"
"Yeah."
"Tell her to bring the shotgun."
"You tell her."
The girl was standing in the river with the horses. "Trágame la escopeta," Billy called. She looked at him. She waded around to the offside of his horse and took the shotgun out of the scabbard and brought it to him. He pried off the forearm and unbreached the gun and took out the shell and lifted away the barrel and squatted in front of Boyd. "Here," he said, "let me have it." Boyd handed him the boot and he set it on the ground and reached down and felt inside for the nail, and then dropped the breech end of the barrel down into the boot and pounded down the nail with the barrel lug and reached in and felt again and then handed the boot back to Boyd. "Them things smell awful," he said. Boyd pulled on the boot and stood and walked up and back. Billy put the shotgun back together and pushed the shell into the chamber with his thumb and breached the gun and stood it upright on the gravels and sat holding it. The girl was back out in the river with the horses. "You reckon she's seen him?" Boyd said.
"Seen what?"
"Them boys naked." He squinted up at Boyd where he stood against the sun. "Well," he said, "I reckon she did. She ain't been struck blind since yesterday, has she?" Boyd looked out to where the girl stood in the river. "She didn't see nothing she ain't seen before," Billy said. "What's that supposed to mean?"
"It don't mean nothing."
"The hell it don't. It don't mean nothing. People see people naked, that's all. Don't start getting crazy on me again. Hell, I seen that opera woman in the river naked as a jaybird."
"You never?"
"The hell I didn't. She was taking a bath. She was washing her hair."
"When was all this?"
"She washed her hair and wrung it out like a shirt."
"You mean buck naked?"
"I mean not stitch one."
"How come you never said nothing about it?"
"You don't need to know everything." Boyd stood chewing his lip.
"You went up and talked to her," he said.
"What?"
"You went up and talked to her, just like you never seen nothing."
"Well, what did you want me to do? Tell her I seen her jaybird naked and then start talking to her?"
Boyd had squatted on the gravel spit, and he took off his hat and sat holding it in both hands before him. He looked out at the passing river.
"You think maybe we ought to have stayed back yonder?" he said.
"At the Ejido?"
"Yeah."
"And wait for the horses to come to us, I reckon." He didn't answer. Billy rose and walked out along the gravel bar. The girl brought the horses up, and he put the shotgun back in the scabbard and looked at Boyd.
"Are you ready to ride?" he called.
"Yeah."
He pulled the cinches on his horse and took the reins from the girl. When he looked at Boyd, Boyd was still sitting there.
"What is it now?" he said.
Boyd got up slowly.
"'Tain't nothing now," he said.
"It ain't nothing from what it was before."
He looked at Billy.
"You know what I mean?"
"Yeah," said Billy. "I know what you mean."
In 3 days' riding, they reached the crossing where the old wagon road came down out of La Norteña in the western Sierras and crossed the high plains of the Babicora and on through the valley of the Santa Maria to Namiquipa. The days were hot and dry, and the riders and their horses by each day's end were the color of the road. They'd ride the horses out across the fields to the river, and Billy would throw down the saddle and bedrolls, and while the girl made camp, he'd take the horses downriver and strip off his boots and clothes and ride bareback into the river, leading Boyd's horse by the reins, and sit the horse naked, save for his hat, and watch the dust of the road leach away in a pale stain downstream in the clear cold water. The animals drank. They lifted their heads and looked out downriver. After a while, an old man came through the woods on the far side, driving a pair of oxen with a jockey stick. The oxen were yoked with a homemade yoke of poplar wood, so whitened by the sun it seemed some ancient weathered bone they bore upon their necks. They waded out into the river with their slow rolling motion and looked upstream and down and across at the horses before they bent to drink. The old man stood at the water's edge and looked at the naked boy horseback.
"¿Cómo le va?" said Billy.
"Bien, gracias a Dios," said the old man.
"¿Y a usted?"
"Bien."
They spoke of the weather. They spoke of the crops, of which the old man knew a great deal and the boy nothing. The old man asked the boy if he was a vaquero, and he said he was, and the old man nodded. He said that the horses were good horses. Everyone could see that. His eyes drifted upstream to where the thin blue column of smoke from their camp stood in the windless air.
"Mi hermano," said Billy.
The old man nodded. He was dressed in the dirty white manta of that country in which the workers tended the fields like soiled inmates wandered from some ultimate bedlam to stand at last hacking in slow and mindless rage at the earth itself. The oxen raised their dripping mouths out of the river, first one and then the other. The old man tilted his stick toward them as if to bless.
"Le gustan," he said.
"Claro," said Billy.
He watched them drink. He asked the old man if the oxen were willing workers, and the old man weighed the question and then said that he did not know. He said that the oxen had no choice. He looked at the horses.
"Y los caballos?" he said.
The boy said he thought that horses were willing enough. He said that some horses enjoyed their work. They enjoyed working cattle. He said that horses were different from oxen. A kingfisher flew up the river and veered and chattered and then swung back above the river again and continued upstream. No one looked at it. The old man said that the ox was an animal close to God, as all the world knew, and that perhaps the silence and the rumination of the ox was something like the shadow of a greater silence, a deeper thought. He looked up. He smiled. He said that in any case the ox knew enough to work so as to keep from being killed and eaten, and that was a useful thing to know. He came forward and hazed the animals up out of the river. They clambered out along the gravel shore and blew and craned their necks. The old man turned, his stick on one shoulder.
"Está lejos de su casa?" he said.
The boy said that he had no home. The old man's face grew troubled. He said that the boy must have a home, but the boy said that he did not. The old man said that there was a place for everyone in the world and that he would pray for the boy. Then he drove the oxen out through the willows and the sycamore wood in the new dusk and was soon gone from sight. When he got back to the fire, it was almost dark. The dog stood up and the girl came forward to take the sleek and dripping animals. He walked around the fire and turned his saddle where it stood to dry. "She wants to go to Namiquipa to see her mother," Boyd said. He stood looking down at his brother.
"I guess she can go wherever she's a mind to," he said.
"She wants me to go with her."
"Wants you to go with her?"
"Yeah."
"What for?"
"I don't know, because she's afraid." Billy stared into the coals.
"Is that what you want to do?" he said.
"No."
"Then what are we jawing about?"
"I told her she could take the horse."
Billy squatted slowly with his elbows on his knees.
He shook his head.
"No,"
he said.
"She ain't got no other way to go. What the hell do you think is going to happen if somebody sees her riding a stolen horse? Hell, any horse."
"It ain't stole."
"The hell it ain't. And how do you aim to get it back?"
"She'll bring it back.
It and the sheriff. What did she run off for if she wants to go back?"
"I don't know."
"I don't either. We come a long ways to get that horse."
"I know it."
Billy spat into the fire.
"I sure would hate to be a woman in this country. What does she aim to do after she gets back?"
Boyd didn't answer.
"Does she know the kind of shape we're in?"
"Yeah."
"Why won't she talk to me?"
"She's afraid you'll leave her."
"That's why she wants to take the horse."
"Yeah, I guess."
"What if I won't let her take it?"
"I reckon she'd go anyways."
"Then let her."
The girl came back. They stopped talking, even though she could not have understood what they said. She arranged their cookware in the coals and went off to the river for water. Billy looked at Boyd.
"You ain't above running off with her, are you?"
"I ain't going nowheres."
"If push come to shove?"
"I don't know what that would be."
"If you thought she'd be left on her own or there wouldn't be nobody to look after her or somebody would bother her, like that?"
"You ain't above just going with her, are you?"
Boyd leaned and pushed the blackened billet ends of two sticks forward into the small coals with his fingers and wiped his fingers on the leg of his jeans. He didn't look at his brother.
"No," he said, "I guess I ain't."
In the morning they rode out to the crossroads and here they took leave of the girl.
"How much money have we got?" Boyd said.
"Damn near none."
"Why don't you give it to her?"
"I knew this was coming."
"What do you propose to eat on?"
"Give her half of it."
"All right."
She sat the horse bareback and looked down at Boyd with her black eyes brimming, and then she slid from the horse and put her arms around him. Billy watched them.
He looked at the sky to the south, all troubled with weather clouds. He leaned and spat dryly into the road. "Let's go," he said. Boyd boosted her onto the horse, and she turned and looked down at him with her hand to her mouth, and then reined the horse around and set off on the narrow dirt road east. They rode on south along the dusty road, doubled once more upon Billy's horse. The dust blew off the crown of the road before them, and the roadside acacias twisted and hissed in the wind. Late in the afternoon it darkened over, and rain began to splatter in the dirt and to rattle in their hat brims. They passed three men in the road riding, ill-sorted horses and worse tack. When Billy looked back, two of them were looking back at him. "Would you know them Mexicans we took the girl off of?" he said. "I don't know. I don't think so. Would you?" "I don't know. Probably not." They rode on in the rain. After a while, Boyd said, "They'd know us." "Yeah," said Billy, "they'd know us." The road narrowed going up into the mountains. The country was all barren pine wood, and the spare and reedy grass in the parklands looked poor fare for the sustenance of a horse. They took turns walking on the switchbacks, leading the horse or walking beside it. They camped in the pine woods at night, and the nights were cold again, and when they rode into the town of Las Varas they had not eaten in 2 days. They crossed the railroad tracks and rode past the big adobe warehouses with their mud buttresses and their signs that said Puro Maíz and Compro Maíz. There were stacks of raw yellow slab-cut pine lumber along the sidings, and the air was rank with pinyon smoke. They rode past the low stuccoed rail station with its tin roof and descended into the town. The houses were adobe with pitched roofs of wood shake, and there were stacks of firewood in the yards and fences made from pine slabs. A bold-looking dog with one leg limped into the street before them and turned to stand them off. "Sick him, trooper," Boyd said. "Shit," said Billy. They ate in what passed for a cafe in that raw-looking country, 3 tables in an empty room and no fire. "I believe it's warmer outside than what it is in here," Billy said. Boyd looked out the window at the horse standing in the street. He looked toward the rear of the cafe. "You reckon this place is even open?" After a while, a woman came through the door at the rear and stood before them. "¿Qué tiene de comer?" Billy said. "Tenemos cabrito." "¿Qué más?" "Enchiladas de pollo." "¿Qué más?" "Cabrito." "I ain't eatin' no goat," Billy said.
"I ain't either."
"Dos órdenes de las enchiladas," Billy said. "Y café." She nodded and went away. Boyd sat with his hands between his knees to warm them. Outside, gray smoke blew through the streets. No one was about.
"You think it's worse to be cold or be hungry?"
"I think it's worse to be both."
When the woman brought the plates, she set them down and then made a shooing motion toward the front of the cafe. The dog was standing at the window looking in. Boyd took off his hat and made a pass at the glass with it, and the dog went away. He put his hat back on again and picked up his fork. The woman went to the rear and returned with 2 mugs of coffee in one hand and a basket of corn tortillas in the other. Boyd pulled something from his mouth and laid it on the plate and sat looking at it.
"What's that?" said Billy.
"I don't know. It looks like a feather."
They poked the enchiladas apart, trying to find something edible inside. 2 men came in and looked at them and went on to sit at the table at the back.
"Eat the beans," Billy said.
"Yeah," said Boyd.
They spooned the beans into the tortillas and ate them and drank the coffee. The 2 men at the rear sat quietly waiting for their meal.
"She's going to ask us what was wrong with the enchiladas," Billy said.
"I don't know if she will or not. You reckon people eat them things?"
"I don't know. We can take them and give them to the dog."
"You propose to take the woman's food out and feed it to the dog right in front of her own cafe?"
"If the dog will eat it."
Boyd pushed back his chair and rose.
"Let me go out and get the pot," he said. "We can feed the dog down the road."
"All right.
We'll just tell her we're taking it with us."
When he came back in with the pot, they scraped the food off the plates and put the lid on and sat drinking their coffee. The woman came out with 2 platters of rich-looking meat with gravy and rice and pico de gallo.
"Damn," said Billy, "don't that look good?"
He called for the bill, and the woman came over and told them it was 7 pesos.
Billy paid and nodded toward the rear and asked the woman what those men were eating.
"Cabrito," she said.
When they walked out into the street, the dog got up and stood waiting.
"Hell," said Billy, "just go on and give it to him."
In the evening, on the road to Boquilla, they encountered a bunch of vaqueros loose herding perhaps 1,000 head of raw Corriente steers upcountry toward the Naco pens at the border. They'd been trailing the herd 3 days from the Quemada, deep at the southern end of La Babicora, and they were dirty and outlandish-looking, and the cattle wild and spooky. They passed bawling in a sea of dust, and the ghost-colored horses trod among them sullen and red-eyed with their heads lowered. A few of the riders raised a hand in greeting. The young gueros had pulled to a piece of high ground and swung down, and they stood with the horse and watched the slow, pale chaos drift west with the sun, leaving the ground behind them smoking gently, and the last cries of the riders and the last moans of the cattle drifting away into the deep blue silence of the evening. They mounted up and rode on again. At dark, they passed through a hamlet on that high plain where the houses were of logs with wood shingle roofs. Smoke and the smell of cooking drifted on the cold air. They rode through the bands of yellow light that fell over the road from the lamplit windows and on into the dark and the cold again. In the morning, on that same road, they encountered Wet and Sleek, coming up from the high country laguna south of the road, the horses Bailey and Tom and Nino. They'd clambered up into the road with half a dozen other horses, all of them still dripping water, and they trotted and tossed their heads in the cool of the morning. Two riders came into the road behind them and hazed them up out of their cropping at the roadside grass and drove them on. Billy neck-reined the horse to the side of the road and swung his leg over the pommel of the saddle and slid down and handed the reins up to Boyd. The bunched horses advanced curiously, their ears up. Their father's horse tossed its head and let out a long whicker.
"Ain't this something?" said Billy. "Ain't this something?"
He watched the riders, young boys themselves, perhaps his age. They were wet to the knees, and the horses they rode were wet. They'd seen the riders and seen them rein to the side, and they came on more cautiously. Billy pulled the shotgun from the scabbard and unbreached it to see that it was loaded, and breached it shut again with a quick upward jerk. The advancing horses stopped in the road. "Shake out a loop," he said. "Don't let that Nino by." He stepped out into the road with the shotgun in the crook of his arm. Boyd boosted himself over the cantle and pulled the lasso tie and paid out the rope in his hands. The other horses had stopped, but Nino came on along the edge of the road, his head up, testing the air.
"Whoa, Nino," Billy said. "Whoa, boy."
The two riders coming along behind stopped. They sat their horses uncertainly. Billy had crossed the road to head Nino, and Nino tossed his head and came back into the road.
"¿Qué pasa?" called the vaqueros.
"Drop a loop on that son of a bitch or take the shotgun one," Billy said. Boyd brought the loop up. Nino had already sized up the space between the man afoot and the man horseback, and he bolted forward. When he saw the rope come up, he tried to check, but he lost footing on the packed clay of the roadway, and Boyd swung the loop once and dropped it over his head and dallied the rope to the saddle horn. Bird turned and planted himself in the road and squatted on his haunches, but the Nino horse stopped when the rope hit him and stood and whinnied and looked back at the riders and the horses behind.
"¿Qué están haciendo?"
the riders called. They were sitting their horses where they'd first stopped. The other horses had turned and taken to grazing by the roadside again.
"Pull a piece of that small rope and build me a hackamore," Billy said.
"You aim to ride him?"
"Yes."
"I can ride him. I'll ride him. Make it longer. Longer." Boyd looped and tied the hackamore and cut the rope with his clasp knife and pitched the hackamore to Billy. Billy caught it and walked Nino down along the length of the catch rope, talking softly to him. The two riders put their horses forward. He slipped the hackamore over Nino's head and loosed the catch rope. He talked to the horse and patted it, and then pulled the catch rope off over the horse's head and let it fall to the ground, and led the horse over to where Boyd sat the other horse. The loop of rope went scurrying over the dirt. The riders stopped again.
"¿Qué pasa?" they called.
Billy pitched the shotgun up to Boyd and then jumped and pulled himself up over the horse's back with both hands and swung a leg over and sat and reached for the shotgun again. Nino stamped in the road and tossed his head.
"Dab your twine on old Bailey yonder," Billy said. Boyd looked out down the road at the two riders. He put the horse forward.
No moleste a esos caballos, the riders called.
Billy reined Nino to the side of the road. Boyd advanced upon the horses where they stood leisurely cropping the roadside grass and threw his loop. The throw anticipated the Bailey horse, and as he raised his head to move away, he raised it into the loop. Billy sat his father's horse watching.
I could do that, he told the horse, in about 9 tries.
¿Quiénes son ustedes? The riders called.
Billy rode forward.
Somos propietarios de estos caballos, he called.
The vaqueros sat their horses. Behind them a truck had appeared in the road coming from Boquilla. It was too far off to hear, but they must have seen the gaze of the other two riders shift, for they turned and looked behind them. No one moved. The truck came on slowly in a thin and augmenting gear whine. The dust from the wheels drifted slowly out over the country. Billy turned his horse out of the road and sat with the shotgun upright on his thigh. The truck came on. It labored past. The driver looked at the horses and at the boy sitting with the shotgun. In the bed of the truck were 8 or 10 workers, all huddled like conscriptees, and as the truck passed, they sat looking out back down the road through the dust and motor smoke at the horses and riders, with no expression at all. Billy nudged Nino forward. But when he looked for the vaqueros, there was only one of them in the road. The other one was already riding back south across the campo. He crossed to the standing horses and cut the Tom horse out of the bunch and hazed the rest of the horses up out of the road and turned and looked at Boyd. Let's go, he said. They advanced upon the lone rider with the loose horse trotting before them and Boyd trailing the Bailey horse behind the catch rope. The young vaquero watched them come. Then he turned his horse off the road and out onto the grass swales, and there he sat watching them pass. Billy looked off across the campo for the other rider, but he had dropped from sight behind a rise. He slowed his horse and called out to the vaquero.
¿A dónde se fue su compadre?
The young vaquero did not answer. He put the horse forward again, the shotgun upright against his shoulder. He looked back at the horses grazing by the roadside, and he looked again at the vaquero, and then he fell in alongside Boyd, and they rode on. A 1/4 mile on, when he looked back, the vaquero was in the road, riding slowly behind them. A little way more, he stopped and sat the horse 1/4-wise in the road with the shotgun on his knee. The vaquero stopped also. When they rode on again, he rode as well.
Well, we're in it now.
We were in it when we left home, Boyd said. The other old boy's gone for help.
I know it.
Old Nino ain't been rode much, has he?
Not much.
He looked at Boyd, dirty and ragged with his hat forward against the sun and his face enshadowed. He looked some new breed of child horseman left in the wake of war or plague or famine in that country. At noon, with the low walls of the hacienda at Boquilla shimmering in the distance, 5 riders appeared in the road before them. 4 of them had rifles which they carried across the bow of their saddles or held loosely in one hand. They curbed their horses sharply, and the animals stamped and sidled in the road, and the riders called loudly back and forth, although they were none at any distance from another. The 2 brothers checked their horses. The Tom horse went trotting forward with its ears up. Billy turned and looked back. There were 3 more riders in the road behind them. He looked at Boyd. The dog walked over to the edge of the road and sat down. Boyd leaned and spat and looked south across the unfenced grasslands, the shape of the lake in the distance palely blown where it mirrored the cloud cover overhead. 5 or 6 lean dun-colored steers had raised their heads to stare at the horses in the road. He looked back at the riders behind, and he looked at Billy.
You want to make a run for it?
No.
We got the fresher horses.
You don't know what kind of horses they got. Bird couldn't keep up with Nino anyways. He studied the advancing horseman. He handed the shotgun across to Boyd.
Put this up, he said. Find the papers.
Boyd reached back and began to unwrap the thong from the rosette on the saddlebag pocket.
Don't sit there with that thing, said Billy. Put it up.
He sheathed the shotgun in the scabbard.
You got a lot more confidence in papers than what I got, he said.
Billy didn't answer. He was watching the riders advance along the road, all 5 abreast now, with their rifles upright, save one. The Tom horse stood at the side of the road and neighed at the approaching horses.
One of the riders scabbarded his rifle and took down his rope. The tom horse watched him approach and then turned and started out of the road, but the rider spurred forward and swung his loop and dropped it over the horse's neck. The horse stopped and stood just off the road, and the rider let the coil of rope fall in the road, and all came on. Boyd handed Billy the brown envelope with Nino's papers, and Billy sat holding them and holding the hackamore rope loosely in his other hand. The insides of his legs were wet from the horse, and he could smell him, and the horse stamped and nodded and whinnied at the approaching riders. They halted a few feet out. The older man among them looked them over and nodded.
"Bueno," he said, "bueno."
He was one-armed, and his right shirt sleeve was pressed and pinned to his shoulder. He rode his horse with the reins tied, and he wore a pistol at his belt and a plain flat-crowned hat of a type no longer much seen in that country, and he wore tooled boots to his knees and carried a quirt. He looked at Boyd, and he looked again at Billy and at the envelope he was having.
"Deme sus papeles," he said.
"Don't give him the papers," Boyd said.
"How else is he going to see him?"
"Los papeles," said the man. Billy nudged the horse forward and leaned and handed the envelope over and then backed the horse and sat. The man put the envelope in his teeth and undid the tie clasp and then took out the papers and unfolded them and examined the seals and held them to the light. He looked through the papers and then refolded them and took the envelope from his armpit and put the papers back in the envelope and handed the envelope to the rider on his right. Billy asked him if he could read the papers, for they were in English, but the man didn't answer. He leaned slightly to better see the horse that Boyd was riding. He said that the papers were of no value. He said that in consideration of their youth, he would not bring charges against them. He said that if they wished to pursue the matter further, they could see Señor Lopez at Babicora. Then he turned and spoke to the man on his right, and this man put the envelope inside his shirt, and he and another man rode forward with their rifles upright in their left hands. Boyd looked at Billy.
"Turn the horse loose," Billy said.
Boyd sat holding the rope.
"Do like I told you," Billy said.
Boyd leaned and slacked the noose of the catch rope under Bailey's jaw and pulled the rope off over the animal's head. The horse turned and crossed through the roadside ditch and set off at a trot. Billy stepped down from Nino and pulled the hackamore off and slapped the animal across the rump with it, and it turned and set out after the other horse. By now the riders behind them had come up, and they set off after the horses without being told. The jefe smiled. He touched his hat at them and picked up the reins and turned his horse sharply in the road.
"Vámonos," he said.
Then he and the four mounted riflemen set off back down the road toward Boquilla, from whence they'd come. Out on the plain, the young vaqueros had headed the loose horses and were driving them back into the road west again, as they had first intended, and soon all were lost to sight in the noon heat shimmer, and there was only the silence left. Billy stood in the road and leaned and spat.
"Say what's on your mind," he said.
"I ain't got nothing to say."
"Well, you ready?"
"Yeah."
Boyd shucked his boot backward out of the stirrup, and Billy put his foot in and swung up behind him.
"Bunch of damned ignorance, if you ask me," Boyd said.
"I thought you didn't have nothing to say."
Boyd didn't answer. The mute dog had gone to hide in the roadside weeds, and now it reappeared and stood waiting. Boyd sat the horse.
"Now what are you waiting on?" said Billy.
"Waiting on you to tell me which way you want to go."
"Well, what the hell way do you think we're going?"
"We're supposed to be in Santa Ana de Babicora in 3 days' time."
"Well, we might just be late."
"What about the papers?"
"What the hell good are the papers without the horse? Anyway, you just got done seeing what papers are worth in this country.
One of them boys that left out of here with the horses had a rifle in a boot."
"I seen it. I ain't blind."
Boyd turned the horse, and they set out back west along the road. The dog fell in and trotted at the horse's offside in the horse's shadow.
"You want to quit?" Billy said.
"I never said nothing about quitting."
"It ain't like home down here."
"I never said it was."
"You don't want to use common sense. We come too far down here to go back dead."
Boyd pressed the horse's flanks with the heels of his boots, and the horse stepped out more smartly.
"You think there is a place that far?" he said.
They picked up the tracks of the two riders and the three horses where they'd returned to the road, and an hour later they were back at the place above the lake where they'd first seen the horses.
Boyd rode slowly along the side of the road, studying the ground underfoot, until he saw where horses shod and shoeless had left the road and set out north across the high-rolling grasslands.
"Where do you reckon they're headed?" he said.
"I don't know," said Billy. "I don't know where they come from, for that matter." They rode north all afternoon. From a rise just at twilight, they saw the riders loose-herding the horses now, some dozen in number before them, 5 miles away on the blue and cooling prairie.
"You reckon that's them?" Boyd said.
"Pretty near got to be," said Billy. They rode on. They rode into the dark, and when it was too dark to see, they halted the horse and sat listening. There was no sound save the wind in the grass. The evening star sat low in the west, round and red like a shrunken sun. Billy slid to the ground and took the bridle reins from his brother and led the horse.
"It's dark as the inside of a cow."
"I know it. It's all overcast."
"That's a damn favorable way to get snake bit."
"I got boots on. The horse don't." They crested out on a knoll, and Boyd stood in the stirrups.
"Can you see 'em?" said Billy.
"No."
"What do you see?"
"I don't see nothing. There ain't nothing to see. It's just dark on dark and then more of it."
"Maybe they ain't had time to build a fire yet."
"Maybe they aim to drive all night." They moved on along the crest of the rise.
"Yonder they are," said Boyd.
"I see 'em." They crossed down the far side into a low swale and looked for some sheltered place out of the wind. Boyd got down and stood in the grassy bajada, and Billy handed him the reins.
"Find something to tie him to. Don't hobble him and don't try to stake him. He'll wind up in their remuda."
He pulled down the saddle and blankets and saddlebag.
"You want to build a fire?" said Boyd.
"What would you build it with?" Boyd walked off into the night with the horse. After a while, he came back.
"There ain't nothing to tie him to that I can find."
"Let me have him." He looped the catch rope and slid it over the horse's head and dallied the other end to the saddle horn.
"I'll sleep with the saddle for a pillow," he said. "He'll wake me if he gets farther than 40 foot.
"I never seen it no darker," said Boyd.
"I know it. I think it's fixing to rain."
In the morning, when they walked out along the crest of the rise and looked off to the north, there was no fire nor smoke of fire. The weather had moved on, and the day was clear and still. There was nothing at all out there on the rolling grasslands.
"This is some country," said Billy.
"You reckon they've done skedaddled?"
"We'll find them."
They rode out and began to cut for sign a mile to the north. They found the coal dead fire, and Billy squatted and blew into the ashes and spat into the coals, but there was no faintest hiss to them.
"They never built a fire this morning."
"You reckon they seen us?"
"No."
"No telling how early they might have left out of here."
"I know it."
"What if they're laid up somewheres fixing to dry gulch us?"
"Dry gulch us?"
"Yeah.
Where'd you hear that at?"
"I don't know."
"They ain't laid up no place. They just got an early start is all."
They mounted up and rode on. They could see the trace of the horses where they'd gone through the grass.
"We need to be careful and not top one of these rises and just come up on them," Boyd said.
"I thought about that."
"We could lose their track."
"We won't lose it."
"What if the ground turns off hard and rocky? You thought about that?"
"What if the world ends?" said Billy. "You thought about that?"
"Yeah, I thought about it."
Mid-morning, they saw the riders entrained along a ridge 2 miles to the east, driving the horses before them. An hour later, they came into a road running east and west, and they sat the horse in the road and studied the ground. In the dust were the tracks of a large remuda of horses, and they looked out down the road to the east the way the remuda had gone. They turned east along the road, and by noon they could see before them the sometime haze of dust drifting off the low places in the road where the horses had gone. An hour later, and they came to a crossroads. Or they came to a place where a gullied rut ran down out of the mountains from the north and crossed and continued on over the rolling country to the south. Sitting in the road astride a good American saddle horse was a small dark man of indeterminate age in a John B. Stetson hat and a pair of expensive latigo boots with steeply undershot heels. He'd pushed the hat back on his head, and he was quietly smoking a cigarette and watching them approach along the road. Billy slowed the horse. He studied the terrain about for other horses, other riders. He halted the horse at a small distance and thumbed back his own hat.
"Buenos dias," he said.
The man studied them briefly with his black eyes. His hands were folded loosely over the pommel of his saddle before him, and the cigarette burned loosely between his fingers. He shifted slightly in the saddle and looked off down the rutted track behind him where the faint dust of the driven remuda yet hung lightly in the air like a haze of summer pollen.
"What are your plans?" he said.
"Sir," said Billy.
"What are your plans? Tell me your plans."
He raised the cigarette and drew slowly upon it and blew the smoke slowly before him. He seemed not to be in a hurry about anything.
"Who are you?" said Billy.
"My name is Quijada. I work for Mr. Simmons. I am superintendent of the Nahuarichik."
He sat his horse. He drew slowly on the cigarette again. "Tell him we're hunting our horses," Boyd said.
"I'll be the judge of what to tell him," Billy said.
"What horses?" the man said.
"Horses stole off our ranch in New Mexico." He studied them. He jutted his chin at Boyd.
"Is that your brother?"
"Yes." He nodded. He smoked. He dropped the cigarette in the road. The horse looked at it.
"Do you understand this is a serious matter?" he said.
"It is to us."
He nodded again.
"Follow me," he said.
He reined the horse about and set off up the road. He did not look back to see if they would follow, but they did follow, nor did they presume to ride beside him. By mid-afternoon, they were full in the dust of the driven horses. They could hear them on the road ahead, although they could not see them. Quijada reined his horse off the road and out through the pine trees and re-entered the road ahead of the remuda. The caporal was riding point, and when he saw Quijada, he raised one hand, and the vaqueros rode forward and headed the herd, and the caporal came up, and he and Quijada set their horses and talked. The caporal looked back at the two boys, doubled on the bony horse. He called to the vaqueros. The horses in the road were bunching and milling nervously, and one of the riders had gone back down the line, hazing horses out of the trees. When the horses had all come to rest and stood contained in the road, Quijada turned to Billy.
"Which are your horses?" he said.
Billy turned in the saddle and looked over the remuda. Some 30 horses, standing or shifting sullenly from foot to foot in the road, lifting and ducking their heads in the golden dust where it shimmered in the sun. "The big bay," he said, "and that light-colored bay with him, the one with the blaze. And that speckled horse at the back, the Tigre."
"Cut them out," said Quijada.
"Yes, sir," Billy said. He turned to Boyd.
"Get down."
"Let me do it," said Boyd.
"Get down." "Let him do it," said Quijada.
Billy looked at Quijada. The caporal had turned his horse, and the two men sat side by side. He swung his leg over the fork of the saddle and slid to the ground and stepped back. Boyd boosted himself into the saddle and took down the rope and began to build a loop, putting the horse forward with his knees and riding back along the edge of the remuda. The vaqueros sat smoking, watching him. He rode slowly, and he did not look at the horses. He rode with the loop hanging down the near side of the horse, and then he swung it low along the roadside balk of pines and brought up a Houlihan backhanded over the heads of the now stirring horses and dropped the loop over Nino's neck and raised his arm aloft to carry the slack rope off of the backs of the interim horses, all in one gesture, and dallied and began to cluck to the roped horse and talk him gently out of the bunch. The vaqueros watched. They smoked. Nino came forward. The Bailey horse followed, the two of them shouldering their way haltingly and wide of eye out through the strange horses. Boyd brought them close in behind him and continued on along the edge of the road. He undallied and fashioned a jim-saw loop from the home end of the rope, and when he reached the rear of the bunch, he dropped the loop over the head of the Tom horse without even looking at it. Then he led the three horses back up along the edge of the road past the remuda and stopped with the horses pressed up against Bird and against each other, raising and ducking their heads. Quijada turned and spoke to the caporal, and the caporal nodded. Then he turned and looked at Billy.
"Take your horses," he said.
Billy reached and took the bridle reins from his brother and stood in the road holding the horses.
"I need you to write me a paper," he said.
"What kind of paper?"
"A quitclaim or a conductor or a factura. Some kind of a voucher with your name on it till I can get these horses off of this range."
Quijada nodded. He turned and unfastened the flap on his saddlebag and rummaged through his possibles and came up with a small black leather notebook. He opened it and took a pencil from the binding and sat writing. "What is your name?" he said. "Billy Parham." He wrote. When he was done, he tore the page from the notebook and put the pencil back in the binding and closed the book and handed the paper down to Billy. Billy took it and folded it without reading it and took off his hat and put the folded paper inside the sweatband and put the hat back on again. "Thank you," he said. "I appreciate it." Quijada nodded again and spoke again to the caporal. The caporal called to the vaqueros. Boyd leaned down and took the reins and walked the horse out into the dusty roadside pines and turned and sat the horse, and he and the horses watched while the vaqueros hazed the remuda into motion again. They passed. The horses bunched and sorted and rolled their eyes, and the vaquero riding drag looked at Boyd sitting his horse with the horses among the trees, and he raised one hand and made a small tossing motion with his jaw. "Adios, caballero," he said. Then he fell in behind the remuda, and they all passed on up the road into the mountains. In the evening, they watered the horses at an abrevadero masoned up out of hewn limestone. The vanes of the mill turned slowly above them, and the long and skewed shadow of the vanes lay turning out on the high prairie in a slow, dark carousel. They'd saddled Nino to ride, and Billy dismounted and loosed the cinch to let him blow, and Boyd slid down from the Bailey horse he'd been riding, and they drank from the pipe and then squatted and watched the horses drink. "You like to watch horses drink," Billy said. "Yeah," he nodded. "I do too."